Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay, we're all set. Hi, Janet. You and I have not had a chance to meet each other, but I'm Jeff Harris, and I work with the PCPCC as a patient volunteer, so it's nice to meet you.
Likewise. Great to meet you.
Everybody, this is a woman who I just actually became familiar with reading her article and references out of Health Affairs in the last week or so, as well as the slide presentation, which you have access to download off of your agenda today. And I highly suggest that you do download those slides because they're a very nice aid to what Janet's going to have to speak about. Janet served as the Director of Health Innovation Initiative and Executive Director of the CEO Council on Health and Innovation at the Bipartisan Policy Center, following 2 years serving as the chair of the BPC's Health Information Technology IT Initiative. The BPC Initiative conducts research and collaborates with experts and stakeholders across every sector of healthcare to develop recommendations that promote innovation and the use of IT to support improvements in the cost, in the quality, and the patient experience of care. Janet previously led stakeholder engagement activities for the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology at the Department of Health and Human Services. She also served as the founding CEO for eHealth Initiative, an independent nonprofit multi-stakeholder organization whose mission is to improve the quality, safety, and efficiency of healthcare throughout the information, health information, and IT. As far as myself goes, I retired 2 years ago due to a rapid progression of diabetic neuropathy, but I had spent 34 years working in the healthcare field, specifically in chronic rehab. Janet, I see that you have spent a great deal of time with this Health Affairs Journal article discussing sort of the state of the state in terms of interoperability in health information technology, specifically coming to some conclusions around the fact that where we have spent quite a few dollars to adopt technologies in the last several years, we have not done necessarily the job that we set out to do in terms of exchanging data around the patient between facilities and different organizations. And I was wondering if you could sort of take it from here and maybe discuss with us your findings and where we might be headed in the future as we move along.
Thanks, Jeff, and it's a great pleasure to be with you. I was mentioning to Tara, I think I was part or a co-chair or of a previous iteration of this special interest group, so it's great to be back, and it's great to be here with all of you at the Patient-Centered Primary Care Collaborative. So for those of you that know me, you know, this notion, gosh, we've been working this interoperability and health information sharing issue a long, long time, haven't we? And, you know, I think we're a little bit closer, but there's still a long road ahead. And when Health Affairs reached out to write this policy brief, you know, they really wanted something that could share the landscape around where we were, what was happening, and it's, so it's really designed to be an educational piece for people that don't know very much about this issue. So a lot of you probably saw lots of things that you knew, but it was designed to be an educational piece. And there's a hint of advocacy in it, but they also want to be sure that these briefs don't, you know, aren't calling for a particular position. So what I did, I put together some slides to sort of highlight some key elements of the brief, and just some direction from you all, Jeff, maybe, you know, how long do you want me to spend just doing a run-through of the brief? How much do you want to spend on discussion, and if you have other items on the agenda, let me know. I'm just trying to get a sense of time.
We have about 20 minutes or so for your initial presentation, and then we'd like to move forward with some discussion after that point.
Perfect. Okay. So for those of you that have the slides, I'm going to assume that you do, and maybe we can drill down during the discussion a little bit about the Bipartisan Policy Center. I've been there 3 years now. It seems like just yesterday, but we were established in 2007 by four former Senate Majority Leaders, Baker, Daschle, Dole, and Mitchell. And really, the reasoning behind the BPC was to try to find common ground when things weren't working so well, particularly on the Hill. We focus on a broad range of issues, economic policy, energy, housing, immigration, and, of course, health care. Everything we do, we're boldly bipartisan as opposed to nonpartisan. And on the health care side, Senator Daschle, a Democrat, and Senator Frist, a Republican, both former Senate Majority Leaders, lead our work in that area. So let's just get right into it. But I joined 3 years ago, and let's go to why interoperability and electronic information sharing matter. I know this group knows this, so I've only got a couple of slides, and it's going to feel familiar to you because I know we did a lot of, I know you all have done a lot of work in this area. But when I arrived at BPC, one of the primary drivers was the fact that, you know, the oversight hearings had begun, right? Something that started out as bipartisan, particularly when I was in the office with David Blumenthal and Farzad, you know, the oversight hearings had begun, and I felt that a lot of the bipartisanship that, you know, preceded all of this may have been whittling away. And it's been a little bit of a rocky road. I don't know how much you talk about policy on this call, but as you know, there's still some rocks in the road that we need to get through in the coming months. So one of the first things we did on slide four is, if you'll recall, you know, high tech, the $30 billion in spending had just begun at that time, and we're much further into it now with $27 billion. On the line that's been spent. But what we wanted to do, and Senator Daschle and Senator Frist led our work, we had a task force to start not with health IT, but instead to start with new models of care with high performance in healthcare, conducted 40 interviews, did a literature review. Your work, the work of the PC, you know, the Patient-Centered Primary Care Collaborative, of course, came up during that review, and we were able to draw upon some of your good work to figure out, well, what do we need? You know, what sort of information do we need? What functionalities do we need in order to drive improvements in performance? And those are laid out on pages 5 and 6. We first started with what are the attributes of high performance, and then we talked about, you know, what is the role of IT? And I'll just roll it up for you. You know, the big things, let me go back. And once we came up with those requirements, you know, like any IT project, right, you go to your users, you figure out what your requirements are, and then we looked at the way that the monies were being spent, and we saw a couple of big gaps. Now, again, this is 3 years old. You know, we saw that number one, we didn't have enough information sharing going on, and it didn't look like it was going to happen anytime soon. And then secondly, we needed more engagement of individuals, patients and their families, and connecting them with providers, and we didn't see much of that. Now, this preceded stage two, right, and we were pleased. There was, you know, quite a bit of pickup and discussion. We were pleased to see that stage two is much more robust. So if you are looking at the slides, that's 5 and 6. We did some other work. I know the roots of your organization are with, you know, many of the leaders that started it. There were a number of members of the clinical community on slide 7. You know, we teamed with them to ask clinicians, you know, with transitions of care, and we came up with three types of transitions What are your information needs? Again, we didn't start out with health IT. We started out with what their needs were. And long story short, I've got a link to the report. We found that there were some common needs. Oh, there you go. I've got the three transitions of care on the bottom of seven. You know, when one of your patients is discharged from the hospital, second scenario, when a patient is referred to you as a consulting clinician, and third scenario, when you get information back from a consulting clinician, what are your information needs? How would you like to get the information? How would you like it integrated in the record? And ACP actually played a pretty dominant role in that. They, you know, I worked closely with them and an advisory board made up of several clinicians to actually move this work forward. The top line findings from that survey were, yeah, a lot of them thought that information sharing was important. There were some key information needs that they had. When asked what their biggest barrier to information sharing was, they said the lack of interoperability of their systems, the lack of an exchange infrastructure, and the cost of both were their biggest barriers. They also said that, we asked them about query types, right? That's a big issue, I know, for those that are working in this field. Do you want the information pushed to you, or do you want to be able to pull it? And they told us that both were needed, so long as they didn't get bombarded with lots of irrelevant information, and I know you've heard that. So timeliness and integration and workflow is also needed. As an aside, had a group of, I guess, 22 medical societies over to the office a couple of months ago, and we actually dusted this off and had a good discussion about information sharing needs. And as you can imagine, and you know probably, there's still a lot of frustration in this area. So let's get to the policy brief. Actually, we've already gone over a lot of components of the policy brief around why this is needed. There's a link to it, I think, in what Tara sent. If there isn't, it's in the slides, you know, that title slide that says Health Affairs Health Policy Brief. So let's go to slide 11. I'm watching my time. Let's see, 12:16. So we've got about, I think, 10 or 15 more minutes. So what's the issue? Okay, so we've just gone through, and again, drew a lot from a lot of that in the policy brief around why we need information sharing. It's sort of a no-brainer. If you look, we're doing a lot of work on delivery system reform at the BPC, and I know lots of people are. You know, there's a lot of discussion about transparency initiatives and the need for that and these new payment models. And you need information to flow. You know, one can't debate that, and it needs to be different types of information. The clinical data that resides within our clinical systems, administrative data, and even patient-generated data. Okay, so the needs out there. We've spent up through August 31, we've spent, as a country, about $27 billion of federal money. And if you look at the private sector, funding, it probably exceeds that considerably. And that's really good, and it's taken us a long way to get to wiring of our healthcare system, having things within the office. And 408,000 eligible professionals, primarily clinicians, have received funding for meaningfully using electronic health record technology in over 4,600 hospitals. The latest adoption data is there as well. There's a bit of a lag between that data and the data of those who have received EHR incentive payments, but it's a big chunk. So, you know, much of the country is getting wired. We've spent a lot of money in this regard. Unfortunately, however, if you go to the next slide, and this comes from another Health Affairs article that was published in the summer, I think it was early August, right before this brief was published, about 3 or 4 days before it was published, where Michael Furukawa over at ONC and others showed that by looking at the data, about 14% of physicians were sharing data with any outside organizations, 14% or less. So still not seeing a lot of information sharing. While not the subject of today's discussion, you know, the article also highlighted the fact that we see very little of sharing between clinicians and patients, you know, the two things that we focused on in our early inaugural Bipartisan Policy Center Health IT report. On the next slide, you'll see data that's a little more dated around hospital information showing they're saying 40% of hospitals, and you have to read the citation, right? 40% of hospitals that have electronically exchanged either lab results, radiology reports, clinical care summaries, or medication lists with outside providers. So that's a long list there. It would be helpful to sort of dig into those data to see specifically what those exchange rates are. So not doing as well as we'd like on the information sharing front. So what do we do about it? The rest of the brief talks about what we've done about it, what we've thought about doing, but we haven't done, and some ideas for how we might move forward in the future. But before we go there, I want to take you to slide 14, and I'll tell you, you know, this is sort of lots of lay people that look at this issue say, you know, we need to get interoperability of systems, and then we're going to solve the problem, right? Or they mistake. So I guess what I'm trying to say, and I think this is a pretty sophisticated group. I'm not sure who's in the SIG these days, but you really need two things to happen. So number one, yes, you need to have systems that interoperate. That means that the software in the office or in the setting has the capability to share information with other systems. So you need that to happen, but that's not sufficient, right? You also need providers, those providing care and services, being willing to share that information. So we really need action on two fronts. And then if you put your policy hat on, that requires authority and action on different agencies, actually, that have jurisdiction over providers versus software companies. And in this case, ONC has authority over electronic health record technology. So that's an important point. You probably knew that. But when you read some of the stuff that's out there, it leads at least me to believe that maybe people don't understand that. So what are the barriers? And I know for those of you who've been at this a while, we always say the same thing, right? So this lack of a business case or the fact that we spend predominantly in our healthcare system, we reward volume over outcomes, has always been the barrier, right? Except a lot of that's changing now. And we've got billions of dollars being spent by the federal government and many, many private sector health plans, increasingly employers, states for sure, that are either experimenting or operating these new payment models that actually require information. Yet, we're still, so yes, it's a barrier. The barrier is starting to come down, but we're still not seeing the information sharing that we need, so some chicken and egg. The second bullet here, lack of access to or cost of infrastructure, this came up not only in our clinician survey, but also a recent RAND study published this summer was it the summer, and sponsored by the American Medical Association, also talked about this notion of having access to infrastructure as well as lack of interoperability, which was the third bullet. You know, the concerns about privacy, when you look at the data, even like 7 years ago, and you look at the data now, the numbers aren't as high. It's not as big of an issue, at least with this audience. That's not to say, you know, the things that have happened in the retail world haven't concerned us. But those numbers are not increasing right now. In fact, if you look at some of the data, the concerns about privacy are decreasing, at least in the medical community. So that's sort of a quick snapshot of where we are. Okay, so what do we do about it? I think we need to look, Jeff, I'm going to speed it up here. I've got about 5 minutes.
No, it's just...
We're okay. Well, this is where we get into, all right, so where are we?
Well, if I could just interject, in summary, what I see is that over a decade period, we have accelerated the adoption and created new innovations in the marketplace of e-health technologies, of which a big part of that is information and record keeping and decision support. And that we can demonstrate the adoption's been there within the individual practices and in the hospitals, but we can't necessarily demonstrate that the exchange is occurring. And I wonder whether or not we should stop using the word interoperability and talk about exchange.
Absolutely. You know, and I still think we need both, and this is why. So in addition to the examples that you've laid out, not only that, now many of us have devices and, you know, personal devices that we use for exercise or other purposes, managing our chronic conditions, and increasingly we're using tools just to help manage the healthcare part of our lives or the health part of our lives. And, you know,
Do you have any idea what percentage of chronic disease patients might be actually using tools that are capable of exchanging data currently?
So at my fingertips, and I bet some other folks on the phone, you know, we're all using smartphones and cell phones. It's almost universal now, more than 90%. And that was a big barrier in the old days, right, around reaching all populations. In terms of those with chronic conditions using devices, I don't know the answer to that question.
I guess I'm trying to help you. In excuse me if I'm just, you know, I may have messed your talk up, but it seemed that as I went through your slides that what I concluded was that you're not content with the rate of adoption of exchange of information between organizations and with patients, and that, you know, you're wondering as to what, or you're working toward developing a strategy toward then how we get to those next steps of getting the information flowing.
That's right. So at 20,000 feet, I think you need, organizations need to be willing to share, and that's not always the case, and you'll see some of the policy, the legislation that's been introduced about that. And number two, the systems still need to be interoperable. And it's not just the EHR to the lab system or the EHR to the EHR. It's also the device to the EHR. And while there was a lot of focus on that a few years ago, it really slowed down for some reason or another, which I hope we'll get to during the discussion. So we need the systems to interoperate, to use common standards, and we need individuals and organizations to be willing to actually exchange, if that. So.
Right, and so, standing from the outside, and just putting down my IT hat and clinician hat and putting my diabetic hat on, I have right now. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight different providers of web-based solutions that desire an exchange of information with me as their patient, of which none of them are exchanging between themselves. That includes fulfilling my prescriptions, getting my labs ordered, going to get the labs, and then the orders moved between physicians along with the results. My care team looks like a primary care doctor, a GI doctor, three emergency rooms, an endocrinologist, a pain management doctor, and a pain management clinic. I do not have a common care plan which addresses my goals as they relate to my biopsychosocial well-being, what the interventions are to improve my well-being, and whether or not there are tasks assigned to parties within my care team and myself and my family to work towards addressing those goals and getting myself to a higher functional status. So as a patient, what I'm saying is I get probably three or four emails a week from different electronic health record sources that are advising me of changes in med routines, orders, and appointments. And none of these are exchanging information between themselves. And in fact, today I copy information from one to the next. So living in an urban area with a couple of medical schools, with two major owners of hospital information technology in terms of the vendors that have done the implementation in the last 5 years. As a patient, I'm not seeing where my job's gotten any easier to take care of three chronic conditions. In fact, it's become more difficult. And my physician, my subspecialty physician in GI told me last week that he felt like it was more difficult to exchange information with the primary care doctor. And two of the specialists I work with do not think it's important to be looking at my complete med list. They believe it's more important they look at the subspecialty class medications that I'm on to treat the organ systems that are failing that they're working with. So what I'm seeing as a patient is the fragmentation and lack of agreement that I saw 10 years ago, or 15 years ago, when I was working in rehabilitative medicine, and we were trying to solve a revolving door issue. The revolving door issue was the readmission of chronic heart failure and chronic obstructive lung disease patients into the hospitals about every 28 days. And we found that the magic of being able to create a system where they could spend more time in the community and at home rather than in the hospital was if we created tight bonds between the physicians, the clinics, the patients, and created patient peer groups and kept them supported and maintained a consistent care plan across the entire organization. And we took off trying to solve that from an electronic perspective in the industry, and I don't think we've necessarily done it, as is definitely demonstrated by the information. So how do we move forward, knowing these things, to put the right awareness in place without it being too much of a complaining? You know, let's not all complain about it, but how do we actually get this thing engineered or re-engineered in the middle and get it directed in the way it needs to go, so that I spend less than 30% of my time taking care of my illness?
Oh.
Hate to be so abrupt, but that's the reality of my life and many others around me.
So, Jeff, I mean, I think a couple of things need to happen. I would say the first, perhaps, and again, when we get to the discussion with the folks on the phone, I don't want to, I can just tell you, you know, in aggregate what...
I'm bringing that up for the discussion because we had hit 12:30. Excuse me if I'm rude, everybody. My blood sugar's low. I'll go drink some orange juice.
So maybe to tee up the discussion then, in the remaining slides are some of the actions that could achieve what Jeff has laid out in terms of what we need to do. And maybe just wrap it up in 2 minutes or less. Top line, So either the industry moves forward voluntarily and it's all hunky-dory and everyone moves, probably isn't going to happen, or there are drivers that cause people to move, the biggest being changing the way that we pay for healthcare to reward Jeff's outcomes, including process outcomes and coordination of care, and information sharing will be needed in order for that to happen. The data is also telling us that even when in cases where you've got an accountable care arrangement, even in the highest performing organizations where we do have a good payment system, the information still isn't flowing. So to stimulate discussion, you can just flip through, because I know we're out of time on the presentation piece. There are a bunch of ideas that actually some of it has been written up in legislation. If you flip back to 22, where actually, and it didn't go anywhere, and I know we'll be addressing it again in the new year, if not in the lame duck, and I know there are lots of people on the phone around. You know, there was some language in the SGR legislation that would create a date certain by which information systems needed to be interoperable, and this notion, Jeff, so many believe there is information blocking going on out there for competitive reasons. And so legislators actually in two pieces of legislation have called for more transparency when either a health system or an EHR vendor refuses to share information, right? So shining light, if you will, on blocking. And there are a whole range of other policy options on page 23 that actually HHS put out there. CMS, which is the largest single payer of health care in the government, as well as ONC, put out some options for sort of forcing the hand, if you will, of clinicians and or hospitals in information sharing. And those are listed on page 23. But in the interest of opening it up for discussion, you know, I think if we continue with where we are, we're not going to get any better. You know, we think that action is actually needed. And that could be, is hopefully a combination of the private sector stepping up when it comes to interoperability of systems. And I know there are a number of private sector organizations that have stepped up. But I think we are going to need to see some action on the payment side, both from government and the private sector. And that's, you know, wearing my other hat on the private sector, talked to the PCC last week about some of the actions that the employers and our CEO Council are taking. So that's to open it up for discussion. Where do we go from here? I just zipped through the last 7 or 8 slides, but all they, you know, they just have different policy options, which I know you guys are all aware of. How do we solve Jeff's problem? I guess it's a discussion question. Do we open up the lines, or who's managing?
Well, does anybody have? I'm not sure how many people are online or for this particular discussion. And actually, you know, just for you and I having our conversation, I hope people will tone in on this and pick up and make a statement or two. You know, why do I need to have my problem solved? I really don't. I guess as a representative of the patients that, you know, are the whole reason I started in healthcare to begin with, and what I see is a lot of confusion, and I would like to see care easier for them in the U.S. And I think from an economic perspective, we can always say that we have the driver, because we're talking about the 20% of the patients that claim to spend about 80% of the healthcare dollar. And there's many things influencing that. So what I do recognize now is that we have a very uneducated patient population. We have many folks that are on the web and appearing now as e-patients and such that are very, very well educated and have done tremendous things for themselves and their families and advocates and the like. I'm an advocate. But we're really just a few, a scattering of the actual total number of folks being managed out there. And the providers themselves, I work with providers, and what I hear is that they're still seeing 2,500 patients in their, you know, per doc in the primary care world, and sometimes it's more than that. In the federally qualified health center world, it's 4,200 members per doctor. And everybody is saying, well, geez, why isn't it getting easier for us? And I think that all of us working collaboratively and trying to be as careful as we are with our politics, as we have to do, that we have to at least have some short-term wins in terms of the ease of caring for people in the U.S., both from the perspective of the patient, the provider, and of course the payer. And I'm a person that got into this business to care for patients, and then I wound up making money developing IT solutions. So I'm certainly not going to sit here and not be the capitalist that I am. Everybody has a right to claim their profit. But what's happened here is we've wound up with more fragmentation. And it would be nice to see, for instance, on your slide 23, item 6, inclusion of new measures in the consumer assessment of healthcare providers and systems to encourage improved beneficiary access to personal health information. I'm not so sure that beneficiaries really care about access to personal health information. I think they might care more about not having to go into various systems and create and accomplish so many different transactions to get their insurance approved, for instance. Like, I took me about 20 hours to get my father his Medicare policy this year. And maybe we should be more involved in defining what those instruments would look like, and then come back in a couple of years and say, well, geez, you know, IT is actually making life easier for folks. And yes, the health outcomes are not declining and the process measures are there. I mean, is meaningful use actually doing what it was supposed to do? I don't know. And those are my questions today, just as Jeff's sitting here going, gosh, how did I wind up talking to this smart lady that's been here for so long and done all this work? And, you know, and it's been 15 years since I got involved in this movement, and I'm not seeing the outcomes I thought we would have.
Jeff, agree. Jeff, this is Tara. I just want to let everyone know that I have unmuted all the lines, and we have several people on the phone. So so if anyone has any specific questions, please do ask.
Please.
Yeah, I'd like to start based on what Jeff just shared and the wonderful presentation that Janet has made. Thank you very much again. It's a very, very illuminating and articulate presentation. Much like Jeff, I've been around the IT in particular, and IT and health for the past 30 years or so. The question of interoperability gets bigger than just the private sector helping or just the public sector helping. It really involves our ecosystem of the healthcare. As Jeff said again, from the patient, provider, payer, and of course, when you look at all the other elements that go into this ecosystem, it's one of the most complex ecosystems of the world. And I've done this personally for other industries. Transportation industry happened to be one of them. Telecom industry happened to be another one. Unless the business model has been designed, developed, and accepted by all members of the ecosystem, every single time that we approach this problem, we're going to hit the wall. And the business model that has been working so far in other cases is the public-private partnership. You can't just send it to the public and the sector and tell them, you may spend the money, you make it work. If it works, I'll join. If it doesn't, I'll do my own thing. And the same thing with the private sector, as Jeff alluded to, profit and making the return for investment on investment becomes a major driver. Not the only driver, but many times, if you can't make money, you can't stay in business. So my question is, if these topics are being brought up at the policy level, is there any interest or is there any tendency of creating this new business model that includes incentives for all members of the ecosystem to make sure that we're all talking about the same issue, we have the same concern, and we have shared incentives, and then we start sharing the risk and sharing the rewards?
Well
put.
Thank you.
So there's an enormous amount of interest, and actually billions and billions of dollars have been spent by Medicare through CMMI, as well as almost all of the large health plans and increasingly employers are actually either experimenting or operating new models where they pay for outcomes as opposed to just doing more. And I think, you know, that is going to help considerably. What concerns me is, so we all said, you know what, there's no business case, and that's why we don't have information sharing. But, you know, we are seeing the business case emerge, and we still aren't seeing information sharing. So I think the business case is step one. I think we are going to need to see some requirements, and we have them, you know, through ONC's certification program, that systems absolutely must be interoperable, or you can't, you know, you're not eligible for federal funding. And you see that in stage two. There are going to be some delays here, you know, which we don't have a position on. So that's number two. And I'm hopeful that transparency around the information blocking, right? So if you're not part of a system and your incentives aren't aligned, but you're still blocking the sharing of information, which will come naturally to you if your competitive business model, you know, pushes you to do that. I'm hopeful that by shining a light, we can have those situations decrease. You know, I guess the question back to the group, now that you're unmuted, you know, is that going to be enough, or do we need to do more? You know, the Jason report had, you know, one recommendation saying, you know, that all EHR companies all of us will be able to, I'm trying to say this in layperson's terms, through APIs, we'll be able to access information from, you know, our EHRs easily. And some say if you do that, then the market will operate more effectively. What do people think? Sorry.
I think that's putting the cart before the horse. There are plenty of interface capabilities between applications are the least of our problems right now. You know, the reality is as everybody has said, there's an incongruity across the business models. A great example is going from prospective payment with inpatient care with DRGs in 1980 when we couldn't keep people in the hospital after a CABG procedure longer than 5.2 days, so we figured out we would open up nursing homes with higher skill levels of nurses, move them into the nursing homes for 14 more days and get paid there while we monitored them before we sent them home. That's what we did at HCA, of which Dr. Frisch was part of that.
Copy machine in the small break room, but there's also a fax machine on.
Hello?
Oh, I thought that was a comment.
It's okay. That's a copy of machine. Well, it was technical anyway. But the point being that, okay, so I received a call this morning from my endocrine doctor saying that I just was ordering, it was her nurse actually, I was ordering this doctor for your thyroid gland, ordering this prescription for your thyroid glands, and I got an unhappy upside-down smiley face in front of me. This is actually what she told me. And I started laughing, and I said, well, what does that mean? She goes, well, I think you're going to have trouble getting it at the pharmacy because I don't think they're going to pay for it. I said, okay, so what do we do? Well, I guess what you should do is drive up here, and I'll give you some samples until we figure it out. So now if you guys will think about all the workflow behind all of that, which is driven by a business rule which has to do with deciding clinical tiers of medications and what they should be prescribed for, there's a whole lot of lost productivity and money there. And that's the stuff that we should probably be looking at. And there are plenty of doctors right now and clinics that are doing this successfully, but they're small operational models that are, we're highlighting them in our conferences. And they're showing awesome, you know, improvements in process and quality and standards of care and contentment with the system, but it's not getting large and it's not distributing quickly. So what I guess some of the things I would suggest would be, you know, if you have a large vendor, for instance, going into the state of North Carolina and buying up all of the contracts for hospital IT systems, isn't there some way that that vendor could be at least asked to create an interoperable system for the laboratories and the doctors in the state, or deal or work with the HIE that's in the state to develop a system that will be more, let's say, supportive of the community and local, but still secure a private public venture model?
Reza Jafari, if I may just add one more point. I know Janet wants to respond. During my 30 years with Hewlett Packard, small company that I used to work for, and doing the same thing again, we called it outsourcing, going after outsourcing and trying to combine systems and processes and makes it more cost-effective, more efficient, and more meaningful and more, again, interoperable, and creating, again, even big data centers that they can talk to each other either through API or any other connection. That run into problems of the politics and the policies that you cannot put too much of a power in the hands of one particular provider. But when I meant, again, the business model of public-private partnership, if the public sector feels that they're the watchdog, they're the ones who are sharing a bit of a risk and also rewards and also taking care of the benefits and safety and security and privacy and other matters that we discussed on the, from the patient side, then becomes a workable model that doesn't have to be on one company like Hewlett-Packard or IBM or, for that matter, anybody else, but they have to work together in order to be able to focus on what is good for the patient, what is good for bringing the cost down, what is good for making everybody more productive and making more efficient. Thanks.
Yes, sir.
So how do you, so what policy levers do you have at your disposal to make that happen? Because it won't happen, or some, depending on where you are on the spectrum, some people say once the business case is out there, it'll all work fine and everyone will be sharing. But we're seeing, even in the markets where there is a business case, that's not the case, right? People that are managing risk are complaining that they can't get information out of systems, that there's blocks.
That's right. So
you've got a regulatory lever that's actually in stage two of meaningful use. If you're going to receive federal monies, you know, meaningful use payments, or if doctors and hospitals, long story short, the systems need to be certified, EHR systems need to be certified in order to that hospitals and doctors can use them to qualify for meaningful use incentives.
Right.
And that's a pretty big lever. Unfortunately, in stage one, the requirements were really not robust at all. They're much more robust in stage two, and I think that'll take us a long way. We've got to fix the query. We need a query standard in place that's missing. So that'll get us part of the way there. It's not going to help us with the lab systems, though. I think on the pharmacy side, I think having SureScripts in there is helping a lot. But what do others think? And will that be enough?
Hi, this I only have 25 years of experience in health IT, so I guess I'm the junior here. But this is not a technology question at all. This question has been resolved since the 1990s and EDI transactions and so on. The challenge is that by and large, many of the diseases that are draining the healthcare system, like a lot of these chronic conditions, do not lend themselves well to Western treatment. And you have specialists who specialize in a couple of organs, and they don't want to talk to other folks about what they're doing. They rarely talk to the primary care physician. They never talk to other specialists. So even if you made this the most interoperable system on the planet, there's no commercial incentive for them to actually want to share information. Whereas in an EDI transaction, you're lowering the barrier to cost. There's a reason they actually want to share that information. So it's not a technology question. It is really how are we going to drive, you know, providers who have been in, you know, business for a very long time and who know more than I do about any clinical condition, to drive them to change their behaviors such that they want to collaborate with a mental health therapist, that they want to collaborate with a dietitian. That I don't know that we're going to address through interoperability.
Well, you can do that. You can do that with reporting standards, and certainly I do it with ophthalmologists right now. I'm working for three ophthalmologists, and I had to beg them to look at full med lists while they were putting their systems in place. But I work for them for free, so they decided that they would do it. Okay. And it's a matter of a very slow cultural shift that I'm seeing in front of me that won't happen in my lifetime. But thank you so much for saying that, because you laid your hammer right on the nail head. This is a major that we have to also be talking about how we're educating people in med school.
Precisely.
So let's just say, so for sure, I think many would agree that if we started paying for better outcomes, we'd indirectly, people, in order to get paid more, would start sharing information. But you're talking about something that's more prescriptive, I think, whereas it's more of an action. Like you need to pay for reporting or pay
MedList can be for MedList reconciliation. You can require MedList reconciliation across all subspecialties for the entire medication list the way that is currently done in MU for the primary care subspecialty for medical home. And they started talking about doing subspecialty certifications for participating in the medical home. One of those things can be just to alter the requirements so that you're looking at the entire medication list. Now, the folks on the behavioral health side are having to push on a lot of different levers to get that to happen. Not only do they have to push on the patient branding issues in terms of patients wanting to release that information, but they also have to push on the state rights issues, because there's a lot of special things protecting the patients within certain states determined by behavioral health diagnoses and sexually transmitted diseases. So all of that has to be working, you know, in parallel as working toward the ultimate goal. But I think it's to get the mindset from the top down, as opposed to being vague about where our requirements are when we say you must exchange pharmacy data using this particular transaction set and use this. You know, what we should say is that when you have a medication list, your job is to reconcile it with the patient, regardless if you're a cardiologist seeing a person with diabetes or a person that's in primary care seeing a person that had a dermatology appointment.
But
This is Steve Waldron from the AAFP. And just a couple of things on this conversation. One, meaningful use does require med rec from everybody whenever it's appropriate. I think some of the challenges are on a top-down nature of, a meaningful use kind of type of program. That one, the complexity of healthcare and the fact that there's not a one-size-fits-all piece makes it very difficult for a national one way to do something and really be able to trickle down into these practices and hospitals and really move the needle. Others, we've talked about MedRec, we've talked about a couple other things, and I think those are one of tens of thousands of problems that we have that we need to solve. And I think that scale problem makes it very difficult from a top-down perspective. Janet mentioned, we need a query standard. Well, there's a lot of standards that we still need and be able to define in a way that everybody implements the same way. In my view, I think the open API perspective makes a lot of sense in that it doesn't require a one national standard. What it requires is that each of the vendors does provide an API that's well documented and that is accessible by their users and those that they proxy access to. And what I think that does is it allows for the market pressures and forces to shift a little bit. Right now, as a provider, our providers are kind of more or less 100% dependent upon their vendor in regards to what interoperability and what feature set that they provide. By providing an API, you start to create a market where innovative companies will say, well, we need to do this med rec and do it in a way that really makes sense, that we start to pull this together, overlap drugs, show where the dosing is really the difference, and display to the provider a nice list that says, here's where we think things are at. Can you use your medical decision making to verify and tweak this a little bit further, as opposed to here's two lists, reconcile them. I think by doing that API perspective, it does start to create a marketplace and changes the forces and moves the focus from the individual vendors that we've promoted through meaningful use to more now the providers and the hospitals that are trying to decide which products and services they want. So why I'm very pro on this API perspective. I also agree with folks who said that it's not necessarily a technical problem. There's some technical challenges, but these pay for performance, this pay for value model needed to continue to move forward if we really want to get great adoption of the technology.
Right.
Great. Steven, what's your sense of, I haven't looked at the latest. I think there was, Karen set up a task force looking at JSON report. Do you think this has legs, or have you been following it?
I've been following a little bit. I think it may, I think the notion of having a platform is not feasible in healthcare. But I think having a set of specifications, that is something that's doable. I still think that we're probably not far enough along in our understanding to be able to create that set of specs for what this platform would look like. But I think, again, if we start to say, vendors, you have to provide an open API, now they start to gravitate to, is there one way to do that that makes sense? Can we start to say, meds, problems, allergies, labs, is there a standard way to do that? Is that, FHIR or some other, RESTful or SOAP-based API? I think the industry will start to gravitate to a couple sets of specifications. And then once we have those, then we can start to refine those. And then I think market pressures would say this is now required of vendors and providers. It's not a differentiator in the marketplace. So let's all pick one so that we can share the burden of maintaining it and tweaking and improving it. So I like the idea. I just don't know if we're ready as an industry to move yet.
Wow.
We've reached the conclusion of our discussion today. Tara, is there some last-minute stuff here that we need to go through?
No, I just wanted to thank Janet for taking the time to spend with us, and you, of course, Jeff, for providing your personal experience and helping to lead this call. Everyone, I will be posting the slides and the recording of this phone call on our website, so you can look out for that. And just everyone have a wonderful afternoon. Thank you so much.